Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the largest and fastest growing segment of society, to those who recognize that all of the world's political, religious, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt. Yep, everything on that list, from politics to religion, from militarism to jaundiced economic schemes and the reporting on them, rotten. That all of these human institutions are now counterproductive and that they are not worth your allegiance. They cannot be fixed. There's no reason to try to change the numbers on one side of the aisle versus the other. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, if you'd like to present a different approach, you're welcome to do so. 877-300-7645. The commercial that plays on SRN News has gone from ridiculous to aggravating. You've got a Christian preacher that's put together a movie that wants to save Christmas. There is a 0% possibility that the moron who produced that Christmas movie doesn't know that Christmas is a pagan holiday. He knows it. You know, when I confronted Jerry Falwell, who put on gargantuan, mega theater productions of Christmas, you know, that was his big claim to fame every year, is Thomas Road Baptist Church, all 5,000 seats, hosted a professional production of some Christmas play, and there was singing, there was dancing, there was full orchestra, and tickets were sold each night. I told him, you know, Christmas is a pagan holiday. I mean, there is nothing Christmas associated with the story of Yahusha, the story of Yahweh, the story of the Torah, the prophets, the Psalms, none of it. No Christmas. Purely pagan. And he said, yeah, that's true. So here's this idiot with his movie, Saving Christmas. He wants to put Christ back in Christmas. Well, first of all, a Mass is a pagan celebration. The Mass that's been added to Christ is based upon the whole notion of the pagan masses in Babylon and then Rome. And they conducted religious masses. They even had popes. You know, the emperors were often called popes. And so you even go to the name Christ. It's not a name. Not a Greek name, not a Latin name, not a Hebrew name. Wasn't even designed to be a name. It was designed to be a title, but it's not a transliteration of the title. It's not a translation of the title. It's just a bogus replacement. It's almost as bad as church, of which there is no basis, not in Hebrew, not in Greek, not in Latin. You know, just a purely pagan term that has been applied to this religion to make the religious feel good about it. When you associate Christ and Christmas and think it is a religious holiday and you sing your Christmas carols, you're being pathetic. You're being played for a fool. I don't care how it makes you feel. I don't care that you don't interpret it that way. It doesn't matter. It's ridiculous. It's absurd. It's disgusting. It's revolting. It's an abomination to God. In fact, in the one prophetic book that he says was specifically addressed to the Gentiles, Jeremiah, Yirmiyahu, Yahweh lifts up, he mocks the whole Christmas tree, cutting a tree out of the woods, taking it into a home, standing it up so it doesn't teeter over, and then covering it with gold and silver ornaments. He says, you're being pathetic. It's ridiculous. The only thing that was positive about that enter that commercial is it said parental guidance recommended. No kidding. If we had some parental guidance, we wouldn't be celebrating Christmas. We'd be celebrating Sukkah. I have, for many reasons, avoided commenting on Bill Cosby's plight. And the reason that I have is that having been in business years ago, I back at the time that sexual harassment was just being legislated, back this was three or four companies ago, and I remember the throng of lawyers that we had in that produced the manuals that we distributed to everyone in the company, and then we had to have seminars teaching people what was acceptable, what wasn't acceptable, and then we had the lawyers come in and teach us. It became just a boondoggle for lawyers. And then we had two female employees that claimed that male employees had taken advantage of them. Male employees said, yeah, well, we did this, but it was mutual consent. The mutual consent is fine. But the lawyers said, settle with women. Fire the men, promote the women, and then settle with them. And they said, but, you know, I've talked to both. You know, you bring them in your office, you have the whole scenario, you interview everybody, you try to get to the bottom of it. And neither person did anything warranting this kind of attention, certainly a settlement to offer, or it was a situation where, it was obvious that it was mutual consent, and then one party decided they didn't want anymore. But the lawyers were just absolutely desperate. Settle, 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 settle. Promote the woman, fire the guy, give them money. And they ended up following the lawyer's advice. And what they basically said is there's no intent for justice here. This was written to punish businesses. The individual that is allegedly perpetrating the crime is not charged, is not penalized. The business is penalized. It's just a way for women and lawyers to extract money from businesses. And that's the way it was presented. That's the way it played out for us. So I was never very keen on it, and have always been reserved when someone says that they were sexually harassed in the workplace. It's seldom as it appears to be, and it's usually a money grab. So when the first person, that first woman came out, about a week or so ago, and said that Bill Cosby tried to drug her and then tried to rape her some 20 or 30 years ago, I looked at it and said, you know, she's not extracting money here. And there may be something to this. And then there was, you know, the reports that about 15 years ago, Bill Cosby settled out of court to silence a woman who had made a similar claim. And then there was a woman that came out about 2 or 3 days ago with a similar claim, not asking for any money. Not asking for anything, just wants the man held accountable. And today, a former supermodel, Janice Dickerson, said that 32 years ago, when she was trying to solicit a role on his sitcom, he drugged her and raped her. And I understand one of the younger girls that actually had a role in the sitcom has now said that he raped her. So it appears now that, you know, you've got way too many women who are making these charges. I've heard two or three of them, and they seem credible. And no one is soliciting money from him. Appears true. Now, there was a period of time where I thought that Bill Cosby was okay. I thought his humor was, particularly his recorded stand-up humor, more than his shows, television show. I thought it was, you know, worth listening to. It was funny. I wouldn't say I was a fan, but I certainly, if Bill Cosby was doing a stand-up routine, I wouldn't turn it off. I'd listen to it. And then there was a period of time after he essentially retired where he was must-see TV. He was the only really stand-up individual within the African-American community that was well-known that would say, we own this problem. You know, the crime problem, we're the perpetrators, far more than we are the victims. That of the poverty problem, we don't inspire a work ethic in our children. You know, we're generations on welfare. We're not inspiring a work ethic. Education, you know, our parents aren't teaching our children. And he went on and on about we need to own this problem and take responsibility and change our situation one generation at a time. And it was powerful words. The African-American activists had a conniption fit, of course, over it. And then he did that for years. He got attacked a lot. And the next thing out of his mouth was how wonderful Islam was. Well, now I'm beginning to see him making the connection. He talked about the treatment of women in Islam was his example. Yeah, well, in Islam, what he apparently has done is kosher. That's legal, man. That's halal in Islamic parlance. You can do anything you want to a woman. In fact, you don't even have to drug her. You can just beat her. You can rape her. And if she confesses and says that you raped her, she's the one that's thrown in the clink. And, you know, the Muslims applaud you. Good job. No wonder he liked the treatment of women in Islam and used that as an example. At the time he was saying it, I was saying, what? I mean, women are abused in Islam. Why would he use that as an example? Has he lost his marbles? Is the guy completely off his rocker? Did old age set in? Well, now we know. We have Glenn calling in on Bill Cosby. Hi, Glenn.
Good morning, Adam. You know, I vividly remember in the late 60s, early 70s, borrowing a copy of the 33 and a third vinyl LP album of Bill Cosby's first comedic album, Why Is There a Bear? And from my local Red Brick Library, and laughing to my side split. I'll wait till we come back.
You know, well, I don't remember that particular album. I did purchase back in my youth some Bill Cosby albums, and I thought that his stand-up routines were absolutely hilarious. We'll be back. Welcome back to Shattering Mess. Yes, there is often humor in the sadness. There is often laughter amongst the tears, such as the case with Bill Cosby. He obviously was a very twisted man. It is apparent now that he took advantage of young women. But beneath that, and for a time, he was also quite funny.
Yeah, early on, like on the cover of the album I mentioned, is Bill Cosby standing there with his Temple University sweatshirt on and his whistle on his neck and a ball in his hand. And, you know, the title of the album was Why Is There Air? And, you know, one of the punchline there is air is for filling your basketballs, volleyballs, soccer balls, you know. And that album was just hilarious. I remember being side-splitting. But then he went on, and he's been like a, you know, fixture in the media my whole life. He had the cartoon series on TV with a bunch of kids growing up in Jersey City, I think it was, or Newark, New Jersey, you know, you know, kids getting along and not getting in trouble. And then he goes on to become Cliff Huxtable in the Cosby Show. You know, he and Felicia Rashad, husband and wife. He's an obstetrician. She goes back to school to become a lawyer. They had both their own biological children and adopted children, and they role modeled the American dream. You know, living in a brownstone for American blacks. Right. You know, to become a professional, and then he went on to decry the rap culture and stuff, and gangster culture, and all that sort of thing. He was always seemed to be this voice of good, and he got roped into the Tuwami Brawley scandal with Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, and then got burned on that when it proved to be a fraud. And so I've always had great respect and empathy for the guy, and I'm very dismayed to hear that he has this dark side. And I think
I knew that he had a dark side before he's had now the half a dozen accusers, all of whom tell a very similar story of how they had a reason to be in his presence. He had considerable influence over their careers. He drugged them and then either attempted to rape them or did rape them. The stories are all consistent, and the women aren't trying to profit from them. So I would say that they're all lying.
This is happening right here in my home county of Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, the respectable northern suburbs of Philadelphia.
The thing that caused me to know that he was off his rocker, though, is that when he started espousing Islam 2 or 3 years ago and talking about particularly the treatment of Islamic women and women in Islam and how he was recommending Islam because of the treatment of women. And I said, if you're that detached from reality, then you have no credibility in anything that you say. And I said, the man's got a problem.
And if you've seen him on TV the past couple of days, he has this really disturbing undercurrent of a smirk on his face that's really disturbing. You know, it's like, what's going on in that mind, you know?
It's like all the images that I saw of George W. Bush was always a smirk on the man's face. And it was a smirk that says, you know, I may not be the smartest man in the room, but I'm getting by misleading virtually everybody in the room, and I'm having fun at it. And I always thought of my meetings personally with George W. Bush, where I was just appalled by him, and how he was it was a mutual deal here, but the Christian right, Jerry Falwell et al., was working him for access, because access is what makes pastors popular. And he was working the pastors for support and votes. And you could tell that it was a game to both of them. Because I remember talking to Falwell afterwards and saying, you know, this guy is not what you think he is. You know, he's counterproductive for America across the board, economically, militarily, morally, size of government. He's playing you for a fool, Jerry. And Jerry's response was, because that was that same smirk always bothered me. He says, yeah, but you know, he's told me that there's certain things he has to do, but in the second term, he'll be more genuine. Well, the second term, of course, he was worse. And then I remember discussing George W. Bush with a former employee of mine who became an officer in the White House. And he said, yeah, Bush played them all. He pretended to be a evangelical Christian. He's not a Christian. Now, right. The first speech that he gave when he was out of office says, no. I says, I've got some kind of a nebulous view of a non-personal God, but evangelical Christian? No, not a chance. We played them all for fools.
Right.
And, you know, that's just the nature of these kinds of individuals. So I do the same thing that you do. I really study people's faces and their expressions when they talk, particularly if veracity is important. And I agree with you on Cosby. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. There's been a truism that has been associated with comedy for a long time, and that is that comedy usually comes out of a place of great pain, that it is out of tears that that laughter emerges. And I've been told that for a long time, and some of the best comedic minds over time have said that to be the case. The only exception that I'm aware of somebody that seemed to have a pretty genteel life, normal life, and was still funny, is Bob Hope. But, you look at someone, one of the great comedians of our age, Robin Williams. And now I understand that Robin Williams had a trash mouth. And he could have been funnier if he didn't have the trash mouth, in my opinion. But I went to Robin Williams concerts. Live appearances. I own some of his CDs. I thought some of his movies were, absolutely side-splitting funny. It was obvious, that this man was tormented. He had a drug problem. He had an alcohol problem. He had demons running around in his mind, and it's that's not uncommon, and it appears that to be the same thing with Bill Cosby.
Well, as I pointed out, I think a few weeks ago, people who use street drugs, you know, in the psych establishment are often thought to be attempting to self-medicate for mood disorders. So, mm-hmm. you know, that Robin Williams was bipolar. His mentor was Jonathan Winters, who was
right.
bipolar.
Yes.
You know, your manic, this manic genius thing going on, you know, and that's why
yes.
they can throw together all these associations that are so funny. But Dean Martin had a tragic, his son
yeah.
died, and
yeah.
he had a tragic time in his old age.
Right.
And Bill Cosby lost his son in a tragic traffic accident 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And,
who's the guy, John Belushi of Animal House, you know, one of the really, really funny, funny people. And of course, he did, had all sorts of demons and died very young. It's I'm sure that there are people who have the gift of humor, where the laughs don't come out of pain. But man, it is there's a lot of it, and when you you ultimately see the underbelly inside the dark recesses, you know, I'm not surprised to see what we're seeing in Bill Cosby.
Well, you may remember a popular song, Tears of a Clown, who's very popular. I want to say Smokey Robinson, maybe, or forget, but
yes.
it's a very popular song back in the day. And one of the symbols of theater, you know, the realm of thespians, mm-hmm. is the two masks, the smiling mask and the clowning
yeah.
mask. Just those
yeah.
right next to each other.
Well, you look at the greatest menace in the history of mankind, religion. You know, it is the it is a... a source of morality, and yet it is horribly immoral. Probably the most immoral thing that man has ever perpetrated would be religion, and yet it is the source of morality for many cultures. The Romans imposed their religion because it was part of their morality. As a matter of fact, one of the highest positions in Rome was the morality police, the grand poobah of morality. I've written about it. It's in one of my chapters. But they actually had one of the highest ranking Romans was there to impose morality. In fact, imposing morality, the individual who was assigned that task for a province had more authority, and in most cases, even than the governor did of that province.
Right. And in Greek culture, everyone was compelled to attend morality plays with the
yes.
big masks and everything.
Oh, of course, yeah. Now, like if you look at what we know about the Greek gods and goddesses, for example, Dionysus and Dionysus' influence on the Roman Empire and then on Roman Catholicism, all of that was presented at plays, and they were presented at plays in Greece. The most famous line of Dionysus, the one that Paul quotes and puts into his Lord's mouth, is the morality.
Right, you kick against the goat. Yeah,
yeah it's difficult to kick against the goat. Yet what they in context, what that line means, and this was the morality of it for the Romans and for the Greeks, was that societal customs and religion are intertwined. Your success within the culture is associated with your compliance with the religion. And if you choose to be a rebel, if you choose to be a revolutionary, if you choose to go against the crowd and speak out against the culture, the religion, the politics of Greece as they are established through the religion, then you will find life very difficult, that it is extremely difficult for you to resist. And, of course, the goad was this was in your face. The Greek playwright was actually telling the viewer, the patron, that the purpose of religion, what Dionysus was saying, is that humans are dumb animals. I'm going to move them around with this sharp stick, with this goad. Like a cattle prod. And anyone that resists my prodding as the influence in the culture in their lives, life is going to be very difficult for those individuals. So you need to go along. And if you look at patriotism today, patriotism is exactly the same thing. To go against patriotism today is very difficult because it is a societal homogenizing and galvanizing a morality. That's the same thing with Dionysus in these plays.
The modern equivalent is far more insidious because they know that the pen is mightier than the sword or the goad or the prod. So the modern equivalent is your Tavistock consensus facilitation thing where aren't you a team player?
Right.
You know, you get a room full of people, you put in a couple ringers, and you get them to use peer pressure to shame everyone into going along with the consensus.
Go to a football game in the South. Like I went to my son's football game in the South, and they had the prayer of invocation prior to the game and then the Star-Spangled Banner. Now, I am not going to stand reverently, which is what they asked of the audience, for either one of the two. Now, in the past, I have just sat down. My son will sit right by me because he's a member of the covenant as well. And for the rest of the football game or whatever you're doing, you're harassed by everybody around you. Now, what's wrong with you? Won't you stand? Got something against God? You got something against your country? You don't love your country? Why don't you leave it? And so but I won't stand for them. So I just I walk out. And I'll use the restroom. I'll do anything so that I'm completely and my son will too, completely distracted from the whole thing. And then when it's all over, we'll come back. But man, you try. Hey, make an attempt to stand up against patriotism when people are being patriotic and see how they respond.
Well, yeah, that's the conservative fascist version. The liberals, the leftist communists have the same thing with, if you dare presume, we have the tolerance tyrants over on the lefty side, you know. How dare you say be pro-life? How dare you be anti-gay? You know, same thing, it's only on the communist side.
Oh, yeah, I was on a plane having a conversation with a man, and we were talking about homosexuality. And, you know, my position on this show is pretty open on homosexuality, which is that I don't care what you do in your own bedroom. I think you ought to be free to make whatever choice you want to make. I'm heterosexual. I do not understand homosexuality. I'm not comfortable with it, but it needs to be a person's choice. My issue is that I don't like it promoted as normal because clearly it is abnormal. You know, 1% or less of men are homosexual. So it's 99-1. It is abnormal. Don't promote it as normal and don't make your sexual preference part of the politics of the country. And yet when you say that, when you just say, listen, I don't want it promoted as normal because it's clearly not. It's 1%. I don't care what people do in the privacy of their own home. They should be able to do whatever they wish to do. And it ought not be subject of discussion outside of two people that share that proclivity. The homosexuals have a conniption. How dare you? You know, I'm offended that you would even talk like that. And so you can throw it in my face, and you can promote an abnormal behavior in my face, and that's okay. But if I tell you the truth, that's not okay.
Now, you're not permitted to dissent. That's what the tolerance tyrants. Tolerance means you have to tolerate anything they say that you're not don't dare disagree with them, even if it says in the Torah that that's a bad idea.
Yeah. You know, what's funny, too, is, of course, on the homosexuality issue is that, I've been a businessman. I've hired thousands upon thousands of individuals. I have knowingly hired many, many homosexuals. And in the businesses that when they were small enough that I actually got to know all the people that I was hiring. And in the early days in each of the businesses, we always had someone that was homosexual. because I was never discriminating in hiring. Attitude was the single most important thing I was looking for. And I didn't care what race you were. I didn't care what your sexual preference was. I was just looking for attitude. And in many of these businesses, they became my closest friends. I mean, we were buds. We did things together, not only in work, but apart from work. I would bring my kids to work regularly, and I'd have them, you know, if I need to step out, watch over my kids. I was never concerned, always embracing and welcoming, so long as you're not, you know, promoting it. Don't promote it, and we're fine. You know, I'm not going to go into my workplace and say, okay, everybody's in the lunchroom now. I'm here to promote the benefits of heterosexuality, and so I'm looking for volunteers, and we're going to have a display of the benefits of heterosexual sex. I mean, come on.
Well, yeah. In the workplace and in civil government, you can do that stuff. But if you're talking about Yahweh's covenant, then it's got to be different.
No, it's a different story. I mean, I am for freedom of choice as it relates to religion. I hate religion. I'm for freedom of choice as it relates to drugs. I'm opposed to using drugs. But I when it comes to homosexuality, I can tell you that Yahweh is opposed to it.
Exactly.
But that's his prerogative. He's opposed to it. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. Yes, indeed, Glenn brings up a good point that Yahweh is opposed to homosexuality. And he's opposed to it because it is inconsistent with the model of the covenant, where men and women come together and become husband and wife, become mother and father, conceive and raise children. That is the model of the covenant, the thing that Yahweh cares most about. We were specifically designed so that we not only would understand the nature of the covenant, but that our very lives would model what Yahweh is offering us as our Heavenly Father, and with the set-apart spirit as being our spiritual mother. And so homosexuality, man lusting for another man, is inconsistent with that model. So I think it's three times in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms that Yahweh says, don't do that. I'm not going to accept the continual practice of that. Virtually every presentation, by the way, of homosexuality is those three. It's written in the imperfect, which means it's not one act, but a continuing behavior. So if it's something that you once did but no longer do, it's irrelevant from God's perspective. The same thing, by the way, you know, the two things I should say that... You know, on a 1 to 10 scale of importance to God, homosexuality isn't even remotely on the list. You know, he has 10 instructions, for example. Homosexuality did not make that list. So it's always odd to me that Christian pastors are having conniption fit over homosexuality when most of the Christian pastors are guilty of violating many, if not most, of the items that did make the list. I mean, they're bearing false witness, of course. They're coveting. But they're also have a proclivity to commit adultery. Far more than the population at large. Adultery did make the list. Homosexuality didn't, in terms of Yahweh's top 10 list. So you ought to keep that in mind if you're one of those who is going to be a zealot in opposition to that behavior, recognizing that everybody ought to be free to choose whatever behavior they want. And in reality, since it's 1 in 1 million people that participate in the covenant, and only 1% of men are homosexuals, I think it's now about 2% of women are lesbians, and it's a very high percentage now of young women who are bisexual. It's a real fast growing trend in the West of women who are bisexual. But,
and I can understand why civil governments take the tack they do on the matter for the sake of, you know, civil peace and you know, getting along. And it's certainly tolerance in that sense is certainly better than having rampaging groups of people beating up gays or something. You know, that's obviously
I don't think there should be hate laws. I mean, I think that if you're beating somebody up, that's a crime. And it ought to be a crime if you're beating them up because you want their money, or because you don't like their sexual orientation. I think that the crime does not change, and therefore there should not be any hate laws. There should be civil rights legislation in terms of, you know, for example, if Wilson is indicted and has to stand trial for shooting Brown, race ought not matter. Race ought to be irrelevant. There should be no civil rights legislation associated with this. I think it's stupid. I wasn't there. I've read a lot on this. My sense is that he was defending himself, but Michael Brown was a bad kid up to absolutely no good. But the fact of the matter is their color ought to be irrelevant from a legal point of view. And that's just not what that's not what we find.
And homophobia is a crock, too, because the fact that you disagree with something doesn't mean you're afraid of it. You know, I might think mugging is a bad idea. It doesn't make me a mugophobe. I might think
The best example is the people that... Right, the people that are an Islamophobe. And I say, yeah, right, okay. If I'm an Islamophobe, why did I write the single most effective book exposing and condemning Islam under my own name? I'm a prophet of doom under my own name. I promoted it under my own name. I've had 10,000 death threats because I did it under my own name. If I'm afraid of Islam, why would I do that? You know, come on, it's ridiculous.